I don't remember when President Kennedy was shot. It happened before I was born. But those people who were around will tell you that they remember exactly where they were when it happened. I do remember where I was when President Reagan was shot. He wasn't killed, but when he was shot, I remember exactly where I was when I heard the news. I do remember where I was. It was around your age when I heard about the Challenger disaster. I remember exactly where I was on September 11th, 2001, when I first heard that a plane had hit the World Trade Center. 4 years ago, on this day, I was just down that hallway in room 301, about to begin Shear, when the word came to us that first one tower was hit, and then the other tower was hit. And it was clear. It wasn't an accident. It was already clear by a few minutes after 9 o'clock that it had been a terrorist attack. We began Shear that day with a very ominous feeling. A feeling that something was going on that would affect us for the rest of our lives. And for sure for the rest of that day. But I remembered an incident that happened years earlier when I was learning Rebbe in a camp. And as we were going to learning groups from breakfast, somebody who had been a previous camper of mine was taking some people who were learning to be lifeguards, some sort of a swim. He hit his head on the dock or something like that, went underwater. It was an emergency, and Hatzalah ambulances started coming, other ambulances started coming. Everybody was converging on the lake, which is where the swim activity was going on, and all the learning groups were starting at the same time, and the master of the camp said, the best thing that we could do at this time, the best thing is to start the learning groups, start learning. Not to come and say Tehillim, to learn. And that's what we did. And remembering that on September 11th, I told the Shear, there's nothing we could do right now. Let's just try to learn. One individual who maybe had a relative who was working in the World Trade Center, I don't know exactly, but he felt he couldn't learn. I told him, fine, get yourself a radio, get yourself an earplug, and I give you permission that if something more happens, you'll stop the Shear and we'll let everybody know what's going on. And of course, as you know, I'm sure you saw it on television multiple times, as the first building went down, as the second building went down, and it was just unbelievable. The feeling of loss of life. I remember Rabbi Yagid walking into my classroom saying, maybe he was in timeout and there was a television screen there, I don't remember, but he said he just saw the tower fall, he can't believe it. There were students in the yeshiva who were up on the roof trying to see if they could see. It was such a clear day. Some of them claimed they saw, I don't know if it was possible, they claimed they saw the towers on fire. They definitely saw the smoke. You could smell the smoke for days later from right here in yeshiva. Why do we remember these things? Why do they leave such a strong impression on our minds? Erev Tzaynes Esther, 1986. It was around 11 o'clock at night. Apparently I was going to sleep early to Tzaynes the next day. I had yeshiva the next day. My family had just come back from a bris of a cousin of mine in New York. I was tired, going to sleep. My mother came into my room to tell me that Rav Moshe Feinstein had just been nifter. My family has a little bit of a personal connection to Rav Moshe Feinstein. My mother's father was a Rebbe, a 12th grade Rebbe in his yeshiva for 40 years. So he wasn't an unknown individual to me. I personally had met him twice, only twice. Once at my first birthday, my father brought me in for a bracha. I have no recollection of him, but once when I was 8, he was able to get me into the apartment to see Rav Moshe. I don't know if we spoke, I don't know what he told me, but I have a picture in my mind of waiting in line and then seeing him and shaking his hand. So my mother came into the room and told me and my brother that Moshe Feinstein had just been nifter. I was in 10th grade. I remember it very, very clearly. Going to sleep that night thinking, until now, it was a world with Rav Moshe Feinstein in it. And now it's a world without Rav Moshe Feinstein in it. The world changed. Whenever the world around you comes crashing down, your assumptions about how life is going to be lived, it's changed. That moment becomes a turning point within your life. You start a new life from that point on. That's why it becomes a memorable moment. You're starting a new life. It's a turning point. Something's different. Something changed. And therefore, that memorable moment is carried with us for the rest of our lives. That's what happened on September 11th. It was a turning point. America changed. The world changed. Every newscast kept saying that again and again. You were still in elementary school, I believe. But what was going on here was very difficult. It was very difficult. I remember I tried with guys in the shir to find the television set, and we found some old thing in one of the teachers' rooms, stuck a hanger in it, and the major channels weren't even working. And we had to get some alternate channel until we were able to see what was going on. People were stranded here. The bridges were closed. People had trouble getting back to New Jersey. The yeshiva brought everyone to the cafeteria for supper. And then parents somehow slowly started getting some of the students home. Other students stayed overnight. Rabbeim were able to go home. At the time, I was the only Rebbe who lived here. Most Rabbeim were able to go home that night. I was still here. And there were students who were stranded overnight. I gave shir the next day in one of the Mus classrooms, in one of the rooms in Mus. Everyone knew it was very difficult. Rabbi Tani Kohn made a bris that morning, September 12th. Made a bris. I remember the Chalap walked in from who knows where in the Bronx. His own parents, Rabbi Cohen's parents, couldn't make it to the bris from Brooklyn. It was a very difficult and trying time. It was a point in time that people had to start thinking about their lives. In the last few years, unfortunately in the world, many people have suffered with calamities that are beyond belief. Calamities of total devastation. I don't mean to compare any of the following things completely. I'm going to try to find one thread, but sometimes when you compare things, you get into trouble. So I don't want to group these things together as if they're equal. You all know there was a tsunami last year in the Far East, killed many people, destroyed many people's homes. We all know how this past summer the Gush Katif region in Eretz Yisrael was evacuated, forced evacuations and people being thrown out of their homes. And of course, it's still in the news, what happened down in New Orleans just 2 weeks ago, the devastation, tens of thousands of people with nothing, practically just a shirt on their back. Chofetz Chaim writes, why do you think an earthquake happened in China? It's coming to tell the Jews something. It's coming to warn us of something. Truth is, it's Gemara and Yevamos, and I am Gimel and Aleph. That whenever something happens in the world, it's happening for the Jews, it's coming to tell us something. So what do these disasters teach us? Again, without equating them, perhaps we can learn something from looking at all of them all together. Gemara says in Erevin and Dalet and Aleph, Chotuv v'ochil, chotuv v'ishti. You should grab and eat, grab and drink. The Alma d'azlina minei, because this world that we go from, kihilula dami, it's like a wedding. Rashi says, hayom yeshno, today the wedding's here, it's about 5 hours long, l'mocher einenu, and tomorrow it's gone. Prepare months and months for a wedding. And the next day, it's just a memory. It's just a video. Tomo l'chupa sh'olechas maher. Wedding happens pretty quickly. But Yisrael Salanter explained this Gemara. Chotav achu chotav ishti. He explained this Gemara. A person should try to grab mitzvahs. He has to grab spirituality within this world. The Alma d'azlina minei kihilu adami. Because it's like a wedding. It just goes quickly. What's the idea? What are we here for in this world? We're here for collecting spirituality. Because if it comes to collecting gashmias, what can happen? It could be gone in a second. The people in New Orleans, I've been reading emails and things like that, the people in New Orleans, they didn't expect it was going to be this bad. The ones who didn't evacuate, they boarded up their houses, they went to the second floor, they expected some flooding. Okay, but once the levees broke, and they're under 20 feet of water, people lost everything. Can't imagine. What would you do? What would you do if Rachman was from Chas V'Shalom, you got a phone call while sitting here in yeshiva that your house was destroyed? That everything that you owned, your clothing, all of your collections, coin collections and baseball card collections, all of your CDs, everything. If you think in terms of your parents, the house, you know how much a house costs? The furniture. How do you replace all that? Photographs, all the memories. You can't replace all that. It's a whole life of gashmias, and it goes up in smoke. We don't know when that could happen. It could happen to any of us, as it happened to these people. Or, Rachmana Litzlan, even worse, our birth certificates don't come with an expiration date on it. We don't know when the end is going to be. In terms of gashmias, it could all be gone. Just like that. Within a day, our whole life could be turned topsy-turvy. Therefore, the Gemara in Erevin tells us we have to grab spirituality, mitzvahs, Torah, chesed, because the world is here today and gone tomorrow. That's all we're going to take with us. There's a story that's going around, perhaps some of you heard it, that I was able to confirm over Shabbos is not true. But these emails have been going around the last 2 weeks about an individual whose name is Mr. Reichman. Mr. Reichman was there were a bunch of Reichman brothers who were from Toronto, who were very, very wealthy individuals. The story was told that when one of the brothers died, there was one who died just before the summer, one who died during the summer. We don't know who the story was supposedly about, but I spoke to relatives over Shabbos, machatonim and grandchildren, happened to be where I was for Shabbos, and I said to them, I gotta know, is this story true? They don't think so. But we'll just say it as a muscle. There was a rich man, and when this rich man died, he left two tzavos, two wills. He said the first one should be opened upon my patira, when I pass away, before the kavura. The second one should be opened and read at the shloshim. He died. His children opened up the first will, and it said, go to my anwa in my house. I have a special pair of socks. I want to be buried in that pair of socks. The family didn't know what to do. That's not generally what's done. People are buried in tachrichim. This, if the story was about the one from Queens, then you're buried in a coffin. If it's about the one from Eretz Yisrael, you're not buried in the coffin. You're just buried in the tachrichim straight. Either way, the family didn't know what to do. They went to the Chevra Kadisha. Here's the socks. Here's the will. Mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha-meis. You're supposed to do what the meis asks for. Can you do it? The Chevra Kadisha said, absolutely not. It's a halacha. You're not allowed to do it. But they said, mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha-meis is what he asked for. You got to do it. And they went to the one Rav, another Rav, supposedly Shiloh went all the way to Rav Yashiv, and he passed him, no. You can't bury him with his socks. You would have thought he would have known better. He was a firm man. This man has given millions of dollars to yeshivas. Millions! Supposedly, again, we don't know which of the Reichmans it is, but one of them, supposedly at the end of every business day, his accountant would give him the figures as to how much profit he made that day. He would take 10% off right away and give it to Meister. A big tzaddik. You would think that he was a firm person. You would think he would have known better. Very strange. Came to the shloshim, and they opened up the second will. And in this second letter, the second will, it said, I assume by now I have been buried without my socks. I want you to know that the value of my estate is approximately $1 billion. This is what I'm giving over to you, my children. But I want you to realize one thing. For all that $1 billion, for everything that I owned, I couldn't even take a pair of socks with me. We don't take any of it with us. The only thing we take with us is the ruchnius. So each of us must ask ourselves, what do I want to accomplish with my life? Is my object in life to have a good time, to have a lot of money, to have a high position, a big company that can go up in smoke and get washed away by a flood, just like that? Is that my goal? Or is my goal to sanctify the name of Hashem, to Mekadesh Shem Shemayim? And how do we do that? By learning Torah, by doing chesed, and by keeping mitzvahs. What do I want to accomplish in my short life? I want to tell you about a conversation that happened recently between two women. One was complaining. One of her children just got married and was going to learn in a kollel in Eretz Yisrael for a short amount of time. And she was complaining about it, that she was spending money supporting them for a year or two in Eretz Yisrael. The other woman responded, I know that you have children, married children, who are going to law school. Do you support them? Because when you're in school, you're not working, so you're not making money. So do you support them? And she said, I do. So one woman asked the other, so why? Why do you support them? And you don't complain about that. So she said, well, for that child, it's an investment. In the end, they have something. A law degree. A method of making a parnasa. But in the end, after learning 2 or 3 years in Eretz Yisrael and Kola, what do they have? This struck the other woman as strange, and she said, in 3 years, the lawyer will have something. But in the end, the one who you helped to learn for 2 or 3 years, now it's so they're the ones who are really going to have something in the end. And not only that, you're going to get dividends from that too. That's an even better investment. You get the schusim for their learning just like they get schusim for the learning. Talk about a return on your investment. And the woman was baffled. It was a good answer. It was a good answer if you think in terms of the end. She just responded by saying weakly, she said, but you know, you have to get through life first. And the second woman said, you're right. But why are you focusing on the banana peels? You should be focusing on the diamonds. Many of you are probably familiar with the mashal of a poor man who couldn't make ends meet, and he heard that there was an island somewhere in the middle of who knows where, that the sands in that island was diamonds. And there are many variations and versions of the story. He went there. It was very hard to get there, and if you went there, you had to stay for a whole year. So when he took one boat to another boat to another boat, and then finally he gets to that island and he waves goodbye to the sailors, I'll see you next year. And he comes to the island and it's true, there are diamonds all over the ground, and he quickly grabs them and puts them in his pocket. And then he realizes, hey, I'm pretty hungry. Goes into the town and this island, tries to buy something to eat, takes out a few diamonds, and they say, diamonds not worth anything over here. Diamonds can't buy you anything, there's diamonds all over the ground. The sand is diamonds. Here, the currency is different versions. Banana peels, chicken schmaltz, onions. There are different versions of this story. I'm sure you've heard these stories before. And of course, therefore, the person starts investing in banana peels or onions or whatever it is, and for a whole year starts collecting and crating and becomes a very wealthy person on this island with thousands and thousands of crates of banana peels. Comes the year, and the sailors from the boat come back to pick him up, and he creates onto the boat 20,000 boxes of banana peels. Oh, does it stink. And when after taking one boat to the other, he finally comes back to the mainland, and his wife comes out to greet him, and she's all excited. Now they're going to have a rich life. And there's that odor from all the rotten banana peels. And she says, what's this? And he says, we're rich. Look at all these banana peels I have. And she said, you yodel. You're crazy. I tell you, you were supposed to go to the island to get diamonds. And he remembered, banana peels aren't worth anything here. Only the diamonds are. And luckily for him, he had a few that he had in his pocket from when he originally grabbed some when he first got to the island. And we're all like that. You're a schmooze, you go out and grab some diamonds, learn some Torah, you daven better, you do a chesed. But then life catches up with us, we go back to our normal routine, and everything becomes gashmis. So this woman said to the other woman, you're right, you have to live through life. There's no doubt about that. If you're going to live on that island for a year, you got to have some banana peels, onions, you got to have some. But you don't start crating them up and storing them and getting ready to take them with you. You don't make that the focus. You have to learn to focus. Whenever people go to Eretz Yisrael, many of you went to Eretz Yisrael during the summer, did you see anyone take all their furniture with them on the airplane? No one takes their furniture with them on the airplane. You go on the airplane. You'll have whatever you need in Eretz Yisrael. You don't take all of your couches and your carpets. No one does that on the airplane. It's like the story they say about the man, a rich man, who came to visit the Chafetz Chaim in his house, and he saw the Chafetz Chaim had a chair, a table. He had nothing. And the rich man couldn't understand. He said, Rebbe, where's your furniture? And Chafetz Chaim said, and where's yours? So he said, I'm just traveling through here on my horse and buggy. I don't need any furniture. And the Chafetz Chaim responded, I'm also just traveling through here. What do I need all this furniture for? Perspective. We're not all the Chafetz Chaim. We usually end up collecting a lot of banana peels. But we need perspective to realize what the ikkar is. It's true that one must get through life first, but don't lose sight of the ikkar. Don't lose sight of what you really take with you. Life is too short to waste it. I want to conclude with the Gemara in Chagiga Daf Hei Amud Beis. There's a Marsha that explains the Gemara. It says that Hashem cries over a number of things. One of the things Hashem cries about is a person who is able to learn Torah and doesn't learn Torah. Then it says that Hashem cries about somebody who is not able to learn Torah. She'ef she la'asok ve'osek and learn Torah. He can't, but he does. Hashem cries about that, asks the Marsha. Hashem should be thrilled. A person who barely has the ability to crack his head over a Tosfos is being osteik on the Tosfos. So the Marsha shows, he's medayik in the Lashon of the Gemara, I would have to show it to you inside. He re-explains the Gemara to say that it means a person who is she'ef she la'asok b'Torah, because he's so busy with his parnasa, he's so busy, he has no time to learn his she'ef she la'asok b'Torah ba'osek in other things, that he's so busy that Nebuch, and the guy feels bad too, I don't have enough time to learn. I'm just too busy. HaKadosh Baruch Hu cries about that. We have to try, and it's easier for us to do it when we're in 11th grade than when we're trying to support a family. Supporting a family, the Ol HaParnassah, is a serious thing. No one could ever really have tainas on a person who is overwhelmed trying to support his family and doesn't have time to learn. But we here, young people in 11th grade, Baruch Hashem, we still have a lot of work, but we have a lot of time. We have a lot of time. A person who is she'ef she la'asok b'Torah, because he's osek in so many other things, HaKadosh Baruch Hu cries. We have to focus on the ikkar, because the gashmius is very transient. The nitzius, the permanent stuff, the spiritual stuff, chatzav ha'achol, chatzav ha'ishti, you got to grab the food and drink, the spiritual food and drink, as soon as you can, as quickly as you can, as much as you can. So these events, and on the anniversary of these events, we're reminded of these pictures of how the world has changed. These events should be a turning point in our lives. The events of the world are teaching us, the Jews, a lesson. We must be mechazik ourselves in Torah and Chesed. The world changed. Our lives, too, must change.